for the love of goats. We are talking about everything goat. Whether you're a goat owner, a breeder, or just a fan of these wonderful creatures, we've got you covered. And now, here's Deborah Neiman.
Today's episode is brought to you by Goats 365, my membership program for people who are living with, learning about, and loving goats 365 days a year. Basic members get access to 6 courses covering housing, fencing, parasites, nutrition, and health, as well as things like composting goat manure and the basics of starting a goat-based business. Premium members also have the opportunity to attend live online meetings via Zoom to talk about goats every month. Visit goats365.com to learn more. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. This is going to be a really interesting episode. We've never done this before. We have had 2 guests before, but today we are actually going to have 4 guests. And we're going to have a second episode with these guests next week also. Today, we are talking to Carol Miller of Foxhaven Pygmy Goats, Gary Miller, also of Foxhaven Pygmy Goats, Andrea Pursley of High Caliber Pygmy Goats, and Diane Key from Fairview and Shastaview Goats. And we are going to start out talking about the pygmy goat. This is part of our breed series. We've covered most of the dairy goats now, and also Kiko goats and fainting goats. And today we're going to talk about pygmy goats and why you might want to have pygmy goats in your life. And I first heard about these 4 people because they happen to be co-owners of the national champion buck. So next week's episode is going to be about co-owning goats, but today we're going to be talking about pygmy goats. And for my breed profiles, I always like to talk to people who have really worked hard to excel in their breeding program. And obviously, if you have a national champion, you've worked really hard to get there. So welcome to the show, everyone.
Hi.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So first of all, let's just start with the very basics. A lot of people don't really know what a pygmy is. I raise Nigerian dwarfs, so I get a lot of people calling me and saying, hey, do you raise pygmies? And my answer is, well, I raise Nigerian dwarfs, but they are the same size as pygmies. So if by pygmy you just mean a small goat, I do have small goats, but pygmy is a completely separate breed. So can you tell us, like, what exactly defines a pygmy?
Well, I think first and foremost, what people need to understand about pygmy goats is it is a breed. A pygmy goat is a breed of goat and not just a small miniature goat. There are a lot of misconceptions that a pygmy is not a breed, that it's just a small goat, but they are in fact a breed. The general description of a pygmy goat, according to the National Pygmy Goat Association's breed standard, and I'm going to quote it directly from their website. The general description is, the pygmy goat is genetically small, cobby, and compact. Its frame is clearly defined and well angulated. Limbs and head are short relative to body length. The pygmy goat is full-barreled and well-muscled. The body circumference in relation to height and weight is proportionately greater than that of dairy breeds. The pygmy goat is hardy, agile, alert, and animated, good-natured, and gregarious. The legs and feet should work together so that the gait, which is also known as tracking, is smooth, balanced, ground covering, and effortless. And that came directly from the National Pygmy Goat Association's breed standard.
Yeah, and if anybody knows anything about Nigerian dwarfs, a lot of what you said is the opposite of what a Nigerian dwarf is.
That is very true.
Yeah, the only thing they really have in common is their height. Like, they're both kind of small.
Actually, Nigies are just a slight bit larger. They're taller than pygmies, and they're thinner than pygmies. So pygmies typically are the smallest of all of the mini breeds.
Height-wise.
Yeah.
Is there a maximum height for pygmies?
Yes, there is. Does the minimum is 13 3/4 inches. The maximum is 20 3/8 inches. And for bucks, the minimum is 14.5 inches. And the maximum is 20 3/4 inches. And that's at the withers. The tallest they can be is just over 20 inches high to meet breed standards.
Okay, so that is 2 or 3 inches smaller than a Nigerian.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, because Nigerians are a dairy goat, so what are pygmies used for?
Well, in the United States, pygmies are a pet for the most part. However, They were originally brought over from Africa as a meat breed with a secondary use as a dairy breed. They give a little richer milk, maybe a little higher butter fat, and they make a really fine cheese. So while they don't give as much milk as a dairy breed, people do milk them still. Their primary attribute is originally as a meat goat, but here in the U.S., they tend to be dogs with hooves, and we just love on them as pets.
And we show them.
And we show them because we love them.
Exactly. So do you have any kind of milk records on pygmies? Like, do you know how much they produce or the percentage of the butter fat or anything?
There are no records right now that are kept on milking for pygmy goats because that's not their primary purpose in the U.S. Generally, and this is rule of thumb, I've never milked mine, but people who have say that it's about 3/4 gallon a day is high producing for a pygmy goat.
All right. And then can you tell us a little bit about the registration information for pygmies and the NPGA?
Well, the NPGA was started in 1976 to develop standards and just create a standard for the pygmy goat that defines it from other goats. So the registration, there's certain things that are required when you register a goat. One of the things is that they have pygmy goat characteristics. And there are several characteristics they must have. And probably the most predominant one, other than body type, is color. There are only 4 colors in the pygmy goat world. Those colors being solid black, black, agouti, and caramel. And I'm going to start from the back going forward. A caramel is similar to a buckskin or dun horse. They're going to be any shade of white through dark tan. They have to have vertical stripes on the center of the socks, which are the same color of the body. They have to have side and rear socks and the dorsal stripe accented in either black or brown. They have to have a martingale accented in black or brown, and that's the bucks only. And then their face must be accented in black or brown. And then the martingale can be accented on a doe, but it's not required. In an agouti simply means roan. And an agouti can be black, gray, or brown. So basically, you're going to have either a black, gray, or brown model. They're going to have white hairs intermingled, and it's going to produce an appearance that ranges from highly grizzled to nearly solid, with solid stockings the same color as the body. So in a gray agouti, if they have a lighter body color, they're going to have a darker gray sock. In a black, the same thing. They'll have a roanish type body with black socks, and then the same with the brown. The black is all body hairs have to be solid black, and then they have to have solid black stockings. They will have the required head markings, which I'll go over in just a minute. The solid black is there are no other body hairs or facial markings that are anything but black. They are 100% black. And it's very rare to have a solid black. Most times you'll have a black or a light roaning agouti instead of a solid black. They're very rare. They must also have muzzle, crown, and eyes and ears distinctly accented in white. And they may be intermingled with hairs the same color as the body. So the only one that is not going to have that required marking on the muzzle, crown, eyes, and ears is going to be that solid black, where they'll have nothing but a black head without the white markings. But these are the only colors that are recognized by the NPGA, the National Pygmy Goat Association. And also, blue eyes are disqualifying in a pygmy goat. And that is one of the biggest differences between a pygmy and a Nigerian. Is if you see a blue-eyed pygmy goat, you do not have a pygmy goat.
That is really good to know. I had heard that, and so that's really interesting. I'm glad to hear you confirm that. I'd also heard that pygmies had very specific color requirements, but I did not appreciate how very specific they were until you just described that. So that's very interesting. I think there's a lot of people out there who are going to understand the difference between pygmies and Nigerians a lot better now. I know I do.
We're happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, and the one other thing on the color that I might add is that white is allowed anywhere on the belly between the withers and the hips. If you have white anywhere there, it's an allowable color. But if you have white anywhere else except the head, where the required markings are on the three colors, it's considered a fault. So if you have a white leg, that's considered a fault. It's not disqualifying. It's just a fault. But I kind of like the bling on my goats. So I'm not a little bit afraid of a white leg or a little bit of white that might slide in front of the shoulder. And I like to name my goats like Extravaganza when they're a little bit loudly colored. So it's a lot of fun. And I do push the envelope now and then. But there, just do consider that there are faults associated with some of those white markings that extend past that belly area.
Okay. And then in terms of horns, are there any requirements or preferences for or against pygmy goats having horns?
So horns on a pygmy goat, some breeders prefer having them, some prefer not to. But when you go to show pygmy goats, especially with the fairs, they do not allow horns on show goats. And the reason for that is, A, it's safer for the animal, safer for the showman, really just safer all around. So we choose to disbud all of ours for the safety piece, but also because we show a lot. And with that, we just don't want the horns. So most of the pygmy goats you'll see will not have horns, at least in this area. I know some other areas are more prone to have horns, but here in California, most of our goats do not have them.
Okay.
I'd like to add to that a little bit. Other than the safety issue for the animal and the handler, we tend to sell to 4-H kids too. But that is another difference between other breeds of goats and pygmy goats, is that pygmy goats are naturally horned. So some goats aren't naturally horned. They're polled.
No, if you have a polled pygmy goat, it is a disqualifying trait if it's naturally polled. And one of the things that I wanted to add about pygmy goats that may be a little unique versus other breeds is that Andrea and I are from Oregon, but we're right on the border with California. Gary and Carol are in California, and one of our largest markets is for wethers. We have a huge market in California where primary 4-H kids as young as 5 years old can show pygmy goats as a small animal in their fairs and things all through California. And so we have a really strong wether market in the companion animal category, where other goat breeds don't necessarily have that. And it's a huge market for us. And therefore, the disbudding is critical for us because those kids can't show with those horns on. So that's another consideration and a difference between pygmy goats and other breeds.
Okay, that is interesting. I didn't realize that there were no naturally polled pygmy goats.
No, if you find one, it will not be a pygmy goat.
So when it comes to showing, how do shows go for pygmy goats? Are they sanctioned through the NPGA?
So all of our shows are sanctioned through the National Pygmy Goat Association. There have to be a certain amount of goats in each class owned by a certain amount of breeders.
Okay. And then it works just like all the other goat shows where they're basically just judging them against the scorecard. So like basically the goats that match the scorecard better are the ones that are going to do better in the show.
Right. They're matching up to the breed standard. So they're placed by licensed judges according to the breed standard, from the ones that fit the criteria the best to the least. And that's your placing.
Okay. One thing to add to that, too, is because the wether market in the pygmy goats is so prevalent, the scorecard on a wether actually has 25% points that are given for show ability. So 25% of that wether's scorecard is how gentle and how well they're trained.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. And then in terms of like breeding and stuff, I've heard some people say that pygmies tend to have some more issues with kidding. Is that accurate? Like if you're looking to buy a pygmy goat, would you look for, I'm not wording this well at all.
I understand what you're saying. So there is one big difference between other breeds of goats and pygmies, and that is that pygmies have a far more difficult time kidding by themselves. More often than not, they do require assistance. So you don't just turn them out in the pasture, let them throw a kid down, and then everything's fine. It just doesn't work that way with pygmies. Like I said, most of our does have been assisted when they kid. We have one that is going to be due in the next week, and she will be staying with our veterinarian who will be kitting her out. If there are any complications, she can get in there and pull that kid out or perform a cesarean if necessary. You know, you don't see that kind of problem as much in other breeds, and a lot of that's because pygmies are the smallest and they are a true dwarf goat.
Yeah, because when you were saying the minimum size was like 13 or 14 inches, I was like, oh my goodness.
Now, there are breeders that have decided to breed for easy kitters, and they may not place as high as if they were just breeding for the typical breed standard characteristics, but they don't have to worry as much. There are several breeders that do this, well-known breeders, and I want to talk to them more. I want to talk to them a lot more at shows and see if we can't find a balance, because it's difficult. You know, a friend of ours just had a tragic birthing with her doe, and she lost both the doe and the babies. And she tried to get in there and get them out. She got the bed there, but it just didn't happen in time. So she ended up losing them all. And that's the big risk you take if you raise pygmies.
I've also had my vet tell me that because they are a true dwarf, their body size, it is close to a normal goat size, while their legs and other things aren't. And as a result, things get a little bit tighter inside. And that's why they have the problems, is just the tightness with fitting everything in. So it's not something to say, oh my gosh, don't do it. It's something to say, go in with your eyes wide open and experience persons with you to help you through it and help you learn how to manage the kitting.
Exactly. So obviously the larger does tend to have fewer problems with kitting. So maybe if somebody was getting started, it would be better if they didn't look for like the smallest of the pygmies.
I would have to say yes on that. And then another deciding factor too is, or maybe not deciding factor, but is keeping your does trim, not overweight, because an overweight doe will have a really hard time kitting. So feed is very important to our pregnant does.
Or
lack of feeding. There is the other end too, to where if you're not feeding enough, you know, we don't feed our pregnant does a lot of grain because we don't want that layer of belly fat in there. We want them to have easy kittings.
Yeah, I think that's something that, like, with any breed of goat, if they're overweight, that you tend to see more kitting problems. Is it easier for pygmies to get overweight, do you think?
Oh. We all started laughing on that one. Oh, yeah. Pygmy goats can look at food and get fat. It just is, yeah.
Like me.
Yeah, they're like us. They do that. It's really easy to get a pygmy goat too fat. But back on the kitting end, one thing that I've started doing in my herd is I've started looking at breeders' birth weights on their bucks. And we're going to be talking about a buck we have right now that we're pretty proud of. But that buck's birth weights are low. And he's a big boy. But his birth weights, at least in my herd, have historically been half a pound lighter. And when you're talking of an average pygmy goat baby weight of 2.5 to 3 pounds, half a pound is a lot of weight to put in that doe. So I've started looking at birth weights on bucks. And when I choose a new buck or when I'm looking at changing a line, I come from the cattle industry originally, and birth weights are a big deal there. And that's what I started looking at. And I've had a lot better luck hitting by looking at birth weights of bucks.
Oh, that's fascinating. And that makes sense. Yeah. To see, because I know a lot of people look at the size of the buck and it's like, well, the size of the buck is pretty much, he's got to be within the breed standard, which is pretty narrow. But looking at like the birth weights of his kids, that's a really interesting way to think about it.
Well, we just had one of our does kid, and she had two babies in her. Each one was a buck and each one was 4 pounds. Now, she is about a third of what I weigh, and she had 8 pounds worth of baby in there. So that would be like me having a 24-pound kid. And if you think of it in those terms, women, we're going to cringe on that one. Kind of a collective, oh my gosh, because yeah, she was sore We had her on anti-inflammatories, painkillers. We actually ended up losing one of the babies. And she wasn't even fed that much grain. They just came out big.
Wow. And so do pygmies tend to have multiples or usually twins?
Twins, I think, is the most common. My rule of thumb growing up in 4-H was the first time they'll have one or two. And then every year after that, you add another. But that is no longer the case. And I don't think it was the case back then either. I think they were joshing me. But typically twins, triplets, quads is a little bit more rare. We don't want to see quads. That's a lot of stuff going on in there with a lot of little legs that can get tangled up on the way out. But yeah, twins is kind of what we want.
Yeah, I was just kind of wondering, you know, since they're from Africa, and Nigerians, Nubians, and Boers, which are all also from Africa, tend to have more than twins more often than the Swiss goats. So I was wondering if that was true with pygmies also.
It may have been to start, but I think that's a trait that's been bred out by a lot of breeders. For instance, in my case, I've only had one doe that has ever thrown quads, and we retired her shortly thereafter. She was an older doe, and she raised all four of them herself. But again, back to Carol's analogy of how much those babies weigh inside that doe, it's hard on those does to have those four babies in there. I don't mind a set of triplets or twins. I try to breed for twins. I look back on what the buck's throwing. Is the buck throwing twins? Is he throwing triplets? If I buy a new doe, I'm asking, is she a quad? You know, how many were in her litter? Because I want to breed for the twins. They can raise too easily. They're evenly matched on their teats. They compete well without over-competing, and you don't leave one out. So for me personally, I like to breed for twins. I'll accept triplets, but when I start getting a doe that sees quads, she's either down the road or retired, because it's harder on them and harder on me, because we don't like bottle babies. I mean, they're cute and they're fun, but they're so much better, except Carol and Gary really like bottle babies. But we all work full time and we all raise pygmy goats, and bottle babies are really tough to handle when you're in a full time position like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, as somebody who raises Nigerians and has a line that has thrown quintuplets eight times.
Oh,
yeah.
We're all cringing.
I've more than once I have said, that's it. I'm just not breeding any of these goats that have thrown five. I'm not going to breed their daughters. I'm just going to retire these lines. Because it's just not fun. If they have five, I just automatically, I'm like, okay, two of you are being bottle fed. Let's go.
I actually recently saw a Facebook post of somebody who raises Nigies, and she had six babies and she was taking care of every one of them. And I just sat there in disbelief watching video of this, and I couldn't believe six babies. That's too much. That's too much.
It is. Yeah, it is. And the thing is, we keep track. We weigh all of our kids every day for the first 2 weeks. And most people do not do that. And we started doing it after my daughters grew up and left home and went to college. And my husband started helping. He's an engineer, not an animal person. And so he needed data, you know, to feel good about what he was doing. And he's the one that started doing the daily weights on the kids. And when he did that, I realized that, like, yeah, you might have, you know, four kids survive, but somebody is going to fall behind. And when I started seeing those numbers, that just was not acceptable to me. And so now typically if somebody has more than three, one of them is going to be bottle fed. And in fact, we're there this year. We just had another set of quads today. And so the little doe is going to be bottle fed, because we don't like to see them fall behind in weight. So, and they don't. If they're bottle fed, they don't fall behind. We've had kids born at less than 2 pounds, and they, if they're bottle fed, they catch up with their siblings being raised by mom. You know, by the time they're 2 weeks, you would not know which one was, you know, 1.9 pounds and which one was 3.5 pounds, because those little ones, man, they'll catch up fast if they have access to milk.
We actually get into the habit of weighing daily when we have bottle babies. Our smallest one was born just under a pound. Yeah, Gaia. Diane, it was one of Diane's does that had triplets. And she was back in Oregon and her doe was down here with our vet. And I happened to be going over to pick up our doe who had just kitted. But her vet said, you know, this one's not expected to survive. Do you want to try? And I was like, yeah, sure. And we were weighing her every single day, but she was what we call micro. She was so tiny, you know, under a pound is just like, if we hadn't had a bottle in her mouth, like every half hour there for the first few hours, we don't know what would have happened. She could hardly stand at that point. So yeah, we got into the habit a long time ago, weighing them every single day just to make sure. And Gaia now is pregnant and she has 1+ babies in her and she is due on April 6th. So she was our big micro celebrity success story.
Yeah, that is amazing. We've never had a kid born at less than a pound. That is awesome that she survived and grew up to be a big, healthy, normal goat.
Well, and she would not have survived without Gary and Carol picking her up and taking her home. I got this call saying, hey, we got your goat and we're just going to take care of her and you can get her when you come back down. And I was like, no, if you're going to take care of that goat for a couple weeks till I can get there, because we live 300 miles apart. So I said, I am not taking that goat away from you. So Gaia continued to live with Gary and Carol, and she is their beautiful little girl now. So that one's not a partnership goat, but she's definitely a team goat.
Yes.
Oh, what a wonderful story. That is so cool. I love stories like that with a happy ending.
What'll be a really happy ending is if she has 1 or 2 babies of normal weight and she delivers them peacefully without any drama and then takes care of both of them. That's what we're hoping for. April 6th, we'll find out. Stay tuned.
All right. So if somebody is thinking of raising pygmies, is there anything else that they should know about the breed?
We all agree to come to a show and watch and talk to the breeders. In fact, the National Champion Show this year is in Red Bluff, California on June 7th through the 13th. There's a little plug for our national show. It's called Glitz, Glam, and Goats. So if you're interested, come watch. I literally got thrown in, went to my first show with one goat, one weather, hadn't a clue. Learned so much at that show. And you talk to the breeders. Find out if there's breeders in your area because we all love talking about our goats.
And talk to us. We'll all be there.
Yeah, we'll be there. Yeah, Diane will be taking pictures. I'll be with Diane. We'll all be there. Come talk to us.
Gary and I will be working the auction and the raffle. So come find us.
Awesome. Oh, this is great. Well, this has been a really great conversation. And I want to tell everybody, be sure to come back next week because we are going to be talking to these same 4 people again. And we're going to talk about their goat, Mick, who was the national pygmy champion at last year's show, right?
Correct.
So we're going to learn all about Mick and how he got to have 4 owners and also just how they do this. Like, how do you share a goat between 4 people? So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's show. If you haven't already done so, be sure to hit the subscribe button so that you don't miss any episodes. To see show notes, you can always visit fortheloveofgoats.com. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/lovegoatspodcast. See you again next time. Bye for now.